Good evening. I had to do a 30-minute practice of letting go because I had a cat who was on my lap and on my desk and didn't want to settle down, and it's a good practice of letting go, of how I would like the sitting to be. What I would like the cat to do or not do. And then when the bell rings, she gets up and goes back and sits on the chair behind me. Very, very strange. I'm happy to see you all. This week I've been thinking, or sitting with the notion of humility and the different ways that it, well, different ways of looking at it, of approaching it, and how it manifests, and how the absence of it manifests as well. And I was reminded of this poem that's quite well known of root from Rumi, that it's quite a longer poem, but the last few lines, I'll just read the last few lines, where he says, "Very little grows on jagged rock. Be ground. Be crumbled, so wild flowers will come up where you are. You have been stony for too many years. Try something different. Surrender." This speaks to me particularly because of the wildflowers. And surrender is, if we think of it in our term, in our Buddhist and Zen terms, it's, it means to let go of concepts, of ideas, of attachment to self and other, what Dogen referred to as the dropping off of body and mind. It's not like surrendering and making yourself less than someone else. It's actually the letting go of the idea of less or more than self and other. And it's humility. And humility, the etymology of the word humility is from the Latin humilis, which means literally, well, it means low, but it literally comes from earth, humus, earth. And so basically what Rumi is telling us is, be ground, be earth, humility, humble, because humble and humility have the same root. I was thinking about this in part because of the most recent events in American politics, but also just as a, in terms of the, in Buddhism, it's not so much like one of the basic virtues. It's the very fundamental point, which is to, give up the very idea of self. That's humility is like the, the basic ground of our practice. And it's true humility is a, it's an expression of a mature spirituality, of a mature practice. When you see, when you sense that someone is truly humble, and you see manifest humility. Another way of looking at surrender is service. And as Bernie Glassman, I may have said this recently, that Bernie Glassman used to say, you could tell the maturity of someone's practice and their spirituality, but how by how they served others, which is another way of saying you could tell by how their humility, how it was expressed. And we don't serve others because we are want to elevate ourselves, and we are not deflating ourselves either. We are actually acknowledging that there is no superior or inferior. We are sharing the common ground when we serve the others. And we're serving ourselves when we serve others as well. So this is a really basic aspect of our practice, humility. Who are we beyond these notions of great and small? And in our Western culture, you know, we have a tendency to have this. So either we are great, you know, and superior, an attachment to a great sense of self, or okay, we let go of that, and then we are feel unworthy. We feel not good. So we haven't found that common ground where we're all one in our general functioning in the West. Probably in the Asian cultures as well, but there's a different sensitivity to it, I think. It's a different sensibility to service and to not elevating oneself and humiliating others, right? So that's interesting, the word humiliate, because that means to actively seek to debase someone or something, to seek to make them low, as in relationship to yourself, who is high, so you want to make them lower. Although it comes from the same root of humility. So I, you know, I've been thinking about this. It's also been so 5 years since we, right about this time 5 years ago, we were starting to talk about COVID for the first time. You know, it's a little bit in December. I remember around Christmas time we were talking about it in China, and at least for me, because you know I became very ill. It was a great, pure, deeply spiritual experience of humility when I was very ill with COVID. It wasn't at first. There was first a very strong ego reaction of, why is this happening to me? This shouldn't happen to me. You know, I'm too good for this, or I'm too healthy for this, or I should be an exception. All of this self attachment. But when I managed to just stay with that and you know, by the grace of stillness and not moving from the moment, I was able to experience humility. And it was beautiful to be no one special, to be not different. And to then experience the world in a completely different way. To experience others differently, because I experienced myself differently. And to have great compassion for others who were sick, for others who were not sick and had all kinds of reactions. You know, as we know, all kinds of crazy stuff was coming up. And I had great compassion because of this deep experience of humility that I had. So initially I was thinking about it because of that. And then well, we had Monday, we had the Donald Trump event, which I was at the doctor at the moment, so I didn't actually get to see it on the television. Of course I've read a lot about it and seen clips from it, but you know, I paid attention, but I wasn't watching it live. And then we had the great moment of grace Tuesday, which José Eduardo shared with so many of you got to see it. The woman, the bishop of the Anglican Cathedral in Washington, who gave an absolutely magnificent sermon about humility. And not only, but that was, one of the underlying moments of it. And I was, of course, as I don't know if any of you other of you have heard it or seen it or heard of it, but it's absolutely it's a very moving moment where this woman bishop pleads with the president of the United States, the most powerful person in the world, who is sitting below her. She's standing in what's called the Canterbury pulpit, or the Canterbury something, which actually comes from Canterbury Cathedral in England and was supposedly made from stones that William the Conqueror brought from Normandy. I think it was made from that, but and then has been transferred to Washington. And it's actually the pulpit where Martin Luther King gave his final sermon before he was assassinated. So it's very historic. There's a lot of other historic events that happened in that cathedral. But so here she is, this woman bishop standing, 7 feet, or I don't know how many meters that is, 3 or 4 meters above the President of the United States, and pleading with him with great humility to show mercy, to show compassion for people who are vulnerable, people who are scared. People who need protection and who are being threatened directly by him, of course, and his government, but also by other people. And he looked her in the eye until he didn't, until he looked away. And if you've seen it, you see how I think the version that José Eduardo sent, the camera is only on him and his family and the vice president. There's other versions where you have her too, you just, the camera goes between the two. But the body language is absolutely damning when you see the attitude of the president and the vice president listening to this plea for mercy. Coming from a place of great humility. So I was curious about this woman. I saw her at, she was at Jimmy Carter's funeral a few weeks ago. She also spoke. And she also, in 2020, when, there's so many events with Trump, but when there was the Black Lives Matters protests in Washington and the National Guard came out in Washington and tear gassed the protesters, and Trump walked across the street from the White House and held up a Bible in front of a church across the way, and said something about he was it was God's will to tear gas the protesters or something, and the Bible was upside down. I don't know if anyone is remembers this, but she reacted to this very strongly and said it was, inappropriate for the him to mix, the spiritual world with the political world in a case like that, in a situation like this. He's a political, he's a worldly authority. He's not a spiritual authority. So she already, it's surprising that he even accepted that she speak at this meeting, or that he even went because she was speaking at this sermon, this service. But so I looked her up, and I found an interview that she gave to the New York Times yesterday, in which she explained why she did what she did. And it really spoke to me in terms of what I had been thinking about of humility. She said that she had not intended to say that. For months she had been she knew she would be speaking at this, but she didn't know who the president would be, whatever. But so for months she'd been planning her speech, her sermon, and she had intended to talk about unity, which she actually did talk about unity. That was the main focus. And for her, there were three elements of that she was basing, if she was going to base her sermon on, three elements of unity, which were honesty, dignity, and humility. And then, as she watched Trump speak on Monday, she could feel the terror and the fear that was spreading throughout a large segments of the population in America, not, and in the world, not only those threatened directly by deportation or trans or gay communities, or minorities of any kind, but just the general population. And she said to herself, "Is no one going to say something? Will no one speak?" And she realized that she had to say something, and that she had to, she wanted to hear the what she called the sound of the genuine. And for her, the sound of the genuine, I'm going to look at what she said, it's, she poses it like a question. What's real? What resonates with authority? Because it rings true. And it touches upon something fundamental that perhaps we agree upon. And she wanted that. She wanted to make heard the sound of the genuine. And to speak for these people, for all the population who is feeling scared and worried and anxious. And then, so the journalist asked her something about how she saw her plea, you know. And she said that to plea for mercy is actually very humbling. She said, I wasn't demanding anything of him at all. I was pleading with him. And she said, I was pleading, like, can you see the humanity of these people? Can you acknowledge that these are people in this country who are scared? And then she added, okay, if not him, if he could not, could others? So she knew everyone would be hearing this, not only the president, but she knew the world would be hearing what she said. And so she was not only speaking to him, of course, she was pleading with him, but she was also pleading with others. And this, you know, as she says, you know, a call for mercy is actually very humbling. You're asking, not, you know, ordering someone to do something, but you are asking for compassion. Asking to recognize that, you know, as we said, you know, that we all share common ground. And that if we can acknowledge that, then that changes everything. Then we can act in a way that if we, you know, can, as we come back to the peacemakers, you know, not knowing, bearing witness. And then, so in the not knowing, we are all one. We have no, the differences, we no longer are focused on the differences in the greater and the lesser, the president and the bishop, the president and the vice president, all of these separations we're not focusing on. All is one. And then from that position, then we can bear witness to what is. We can see how people are frightened. We can see how people feel threatened. How the climate, the planet is threatened. The rest of the world is threatened. And we can see that if we are not attached to our ideas and our concepts of self and other, to come back to the Buddhist terminology. And from that place, then we can know what is appropriate action. How do we then take action from that place? What needs to be done? And for her, what needed to be done was to speak up. was to use her pulpit. So this was the authentic, this is an authentic spiritual pulpit. And in English, we have this expression bully pulpit, which means the someone who is in a position of authority uses their place to be a bully. And we know who we're most familiar with who does that. The person she was looking at, eye to eye, uses his pulpit usually to bully and aggress. And he even then, after the speech, after her sermon, said horrible things about her on social media and to journalists, said she was a nasty woman, which was his favored term to denigrate women, is they're nasty. Someone said she should be deported. Someone else said, a conservative Christian said, woman bishop, that says it all. She has no spiritual authority because she's a woman, right? She said in this interview she was not expecting this. She did not anticipate all of the animosity that would be generated. And maybe that's good because maybe she wouldn't have done it. I think she would have done it anyway, speaking from her heart and from the truth and from what she felt to be genuine, the sound of the genuine, and with humility, and compassion. I think she would have done it anyway, I'm assuming. And so even in the Christian scriptures, humility is considered great. The meek will inherit the earth, Christ said. The meek or the humble, and there's somewhere where it says when pride comes, there's disgrace. When humility comes, there's wisdom. So I'd somewhere in, Proverbs or somewhere, I don't know, but someone else wrote to me that we were exchanging about this, and he said, maybe this Trump's presidency will serve as a vaccination against for the world against this kind of outrageous populism that he manifests in this arrogant, pride or some, lack of humility. Thought, wow, that's an interesting position, huh? Maybe this will vaccinate the world and we won't do this anymore. It's a hopeful possibility. And there's also great hope in that, there are women like this archbishop, this bishop who, speaks. Her thought, first thought was, is no one going to say anything? Because we're so inundated with it. I mean, this is also one of Trump's tactics. He floods the media with so much stuff that you don't, like in French, we say, you don't, on sait pas où se donner la tête. You don't know what to look at because it's just overflow. But so this was a great teaching for us that she stood there and she spoke her truth and with great humility pleaded for compassion and mercy. And if she can do it, we can do it. We don't need to be standing in a pulpit in a church. That our practice is that, to awaken to the oneness of things and then act from that. The wisdom of seeing the oneness, the action of that wisdom, the functioning of that wisdom is compassion, mercy. To take Obama's phrase, yes, we can. We can. We can do it. It doesn't mean, you have to go and make a sermon in Washington Cathedral, It's every day in your life, in your interactions with others. And paying attention to what is this, what did she say? The sound of the genuine. Avalokiteshvara or Kanzion or Kanon, the Bodhisattva of compassion, hears the sounds of the world or hears the cries of the world. And in the Buddhist iconography, that is one of the that's one of the greatest archetypes, is Avalokiteshvara. And that's to hear the sound of the genuine, to hear it and to speak it and to respond to it. And if you are one with what you do, again, Bernie used to say, if you just chanted the hearts to chant the Heart Sutra and really manifest it, you only need to chant the first letter of the sutra. Ah, it's Avalokiteshvara is how it starts. You only need to chant ah, but entirely with your entire being. Ah. You give yourself to it. You're not separate from it. And then that's when the sound of the genuine arises, and when appropriate loving healing action arises. When we truly are express who we are, our true essence, our great humility. We have to go through the fire of pride, though. We have to go through it. The pride, the hanging on to the ego, like me when I was sick, I had to go through that darkness of why is this happening to me and feeling sorry for myself and why is everyone else having fun with funny videos and baking bread, and here I am, like, not knowing if I'm going to live or die. And then when I could let go of all that, then, oh, I was so happy for those people making sourdough bread. I was so happy for everyone, laughing at funny things on the internet. I felt, heartbroken for people who died alone or who lost their family members. I felt, heartbroken as well by all of the strife and struggle that was arising around blaming and not wanting to follow rules and arguing about what the rules should be or not, and complaining. The French are great with complaining, and so all of this stuff. We had to, unlike other countries, we had to have actually a paper. To go out of your house, you had to fill out a form, and you had to say you could only go out for a limited amount of time. I forget how much it was, but could only, and you could only go within a kilometer radius of your home. And so, and you had to have this form with you. So if the police stopped you, you had to prove that you could go, you were allowed to be where you were. And of course, everyone complained bitterly about this. So I had compassion for the bitter complaining, but I also had compassion for the authorities who were trying to do their best to save lives and not let this virus run wild. And that's where we meet. Rumi is great with all of those things. What is it out beyond the place of right and wrong, there's a field. I'll meet you there. That's our common ground, and our common ground is we are the ground. Now, as I always say to you, you are the ground of awakening. Where you sit is the throne of awakening. There's nowhere else. You are that ground. And that's not inflated ego inflation. That's humility. It's right here. It's nowhere else. It's nothing special. It's just this. And so then, can we have mercy, show mercy and compassion for those who don't experience that? For those who no one's paying attention to? For those who feel that they are unworthy, who feel threatened, can we, show compassion for them and hear the bishop's plea for mercy? Hear that sound of the genuine. So that's what was happening for me this week. Please share or ask questions, whatever you would like. Ingrid.
Yeah, thank you, Roshi, for this beautiful talk. What comes up for me is that I have a question about, well, you speak of the unity where also the bishop speaks from, and the unity that we can find in our practice, like the no self or the not knowing. And I know my way a bit to get there, to really deepen in and to sink in and to get this spacious experience and not knowing. And sometimes it frightens me. And I have to listen deeply. If you speak of sound of the genuine, I have to listen deeply. But that speaking out to me is something that is I'm not sure how to do or where to do that, and to where to point it at, to what, or to, this bishop has a place to speak up, and she was invited to speak, and you have a place, and how can I know where to speak and to speak the truth? It feels like well, a lot of people are silent also about, the what's going on in the world and the climate, and we are all like a bit paralyzed about it, doing not much about it. And this is also what I mentioned, that I'm not sure. How does that work? Could you maybe say something about this?
Yeah, I hear you. And I'm sure we all can relate to some extent with that. So the place, like what I just said is, this your seat is your pulpit. That's where you speak, wherever you are. And speak, that's this we can look at it metaphorically, it just means to act from this place of what we feel is the truth, what in our heart, and it can be, bringing soup to a neighbor who is sick, or it can be, greeting someone in the street. It takes many different forms. We never know. It's different in every moment. It can be silence, but then that's a different kind of silence. Because sometimes silence is not necessarily just an absence of noise. It can be presence. We can be very present in the silence. Like in the council circle, we say to people, you can offer your silence if you want to instead of talking. However, you manifest it fully, really, because if what you want to share is silence, then you have to really be it. So it's different than silence because someone told us to shut up or we're afraid to speak. It can also be we don't know what to say, like you say, or we don't know what to do. We feel powerless. We feel, frightened. It seems so big. And that's another thing we can look at. It's not big or small, your life just right here now. It doesn't mean you have to, if you wait till you're, fully enlightened and, have an experience like the Buddha, well, then you're never going to do anything, right? None of us are. So it really means wherever you are, acting according to your circumstances, the situation, the people, whatever it is, acting from a place of heart, of wholeness. And our sitting practice helps us. You know, we become familiar with the silence. We become familiar with the letting go. We have moments of, you know, opening when we see that all is one, and then everything is beautiful and joyful and we feel good, you know. But someone I just heard the other day say, solitude, can we use solitude as a gateway to community? So can we use this sitting alone, the silence of sitting together but alone, and we see it's a miracle, the Sangha, actually. Because, you know, people I've been sitting with for 30 years, some of them, I can't remember their last, I don't really know their last name, and I'm not quite sure what they actually do for a living, you know. Actually, most of them are probably retired if they've been around for 30 years, but I had this odd experience when I was invited by one of my Dharma brothers to England to give, to lead a retreat, a weekend session. He now, his name is Scott, he now has received transmission, but at this time he hadn't, and I was quite young, a young sensei, so he invited me to come and lead a session with the group that he sat with there. And I got to the airport, and at this time I didn't yet have a French passport, I had only an American passport, and they, you know, so I had to go through the customs, and they, you know, questioned me and said, where are you going? And I didn't know where I was going. He was picking me up at the airport, but I didn't actually know where I was going. And they said, well, where are you going to stay? I didn't know the address of where I was going to stay. And they said, well, what, you know, who are you staying with? And I just blanked. I could not think of his last name, Scott. And it was the most astounding thing. Here is someone who I know deeply, intimately well, and I'm going to share this, like, what is most precious to both of us in our lives. And I don't know who he is, and I don't know where he lives, and I don't know anything else about him, you know? I still don't know really what Scott's job is, although I think he has, like, some management position in an insurance company or something, but I don't really know what he does or anything. In any case, so, you know, this silence, can we experience silence and solitude as presence? And then that opens us to others and to what our surroundings and to what needs, what we can do, you know? So it's, you know, think local, something like that.
Thank you very much. It's great.
I would like to know better to speak in English, but I am going to try. I would like to express something that has to do with listening and listening, the silence. Well, I'll go to this example. When I came to here, to the country, it really bothers me, the hunters, since the hunters in Sundays, every Sunday and every Tuesday, but mostly in Sundays, the sounds of the shoots around me during the all morning, and many, many shoots, and I know animals were perishing around me, and it hurt me, this everyday Sunday hunting place around me. But I thought the countryside would be grating, very quiet, very, no, first it was the hunters. Then I noticed Sundays too, there was these football games and the sounds came all afternoon with people for some time, something bigger was happening in the room. And then one day I was there in the country and I had little bamboos that are growing and they are bigger now. And I was listening to the wind in the leaves. And I shoot things in video. So I brought my camera and I was like, just fix it camera. And just the wind in the bamboos. I was listening to it and I stood there for, I don't know, 10 to 15 minutes. And then I realized that there was the sound of the wind and the leaves, and it was the bird singing too. From time to time, there was cha cha shooters, shooters, and from time to time, that was this football people. Everything was there in the shooting. So, this woman and the speech she gives is kind of, we are in a vast garden, and she's the wind or the sound of the speech coming from this place of unity. It's like the birds and the wind and other people, there are really duality in our world, but at the same time everything is there too, and we can see it. So if we can express it to others, sometimes we can be with it, and it's a vast garden, our world, and it's what I see and I experience sometimes, and it's a great world, even with Trump and people like Trump, they are a part of us. Yeah, it's what it is. Thank you.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they're all sounds of the world, you know. It's a vast garden, beautiful. You know, like we'd say about wildflower, that we're a, you know, we don't have any fixed place, right? We're wild. And so we say the world is our zendo and the earth is our altar. So that's like what you just said, you know, this is the garden. The world is our garden. That's where we grow wherever we're planted. Life is that, you know, all of it. I think it was Dido Laurie who used to say it's the whole catastrophe. The whole, you know, catastrophe in the sense that it's all impermanent and it's all, you know, it's all going. It's already gone, you know.
Hello, Amy. hello, everybody. You know, it's I'm coming back to speaking from the heart, and I experienced something very nice lately. It was, you know, because I'm working in a place, and there was this famous day. Oh, they invite everybody in the big hall, and they. To wish Happy New Year to everybody. And it was a lot of people speaking. And it was very, very boring. Like everybody was saying something, but it was like, oh. So my boss said, please, Claudia, stay. It's really important. You know, I want people to see you and please stay. So we had to hear all these people for like 3 hours. And I was like, going to die. And at this point, the director of the place, which is a woman, she gave her speech. And I was just astonishing. I mean, everybody, I think everybody was like so tired of the 3 hours of speaking, and I think that was, and she just said, "Oh, a week ago I went by the sea and I was thinking of you all guys." And I really, and it was so beautiful the way she said it. It was so simple and so, it was really so true, because I don't know, something was happening that didn't happen the 3 hours before. And I saw everybody, like the perfect silence just in 3 seconds. And what I was thinking is that so that was nice, because I think she really, I think that was true. I really believed it, because the way she said it, it sounds really true. And after, I think that it's because I recognized, because I think she's really very equal and very nice. When you meet her anytime, she's always very, she has something special. She knows exactly who you are. She knows exactly what you're doing. She knows exactly when you arrived. So, some simple things about you, but I mean, we have a lot of people in that place. And I think at that time, I could relink. I mean, I could link to all these moments I meet her during the year. So it was kind of, she was true speaking at that time, but she was also, I could recognize her every time I met her during the year. So it was like, you know, it was not out of anywhere. It was something like a way that she would have built with each of us. So I don't know. I was just crying after 5 minutes. So it's really like, wow, I wasn't expecting that at all. So it was really, really nice. And I'm really very impressed to be in a place like that, and to have, like, I know she will have to leave because they cannot stay too long in the same place. But I'm like, wow, okay, you can be like in a very high place somewhere, and you can be a very good person. And so I was kind of very impressed.
Well, beautiful. That's encouraging, right?
Yes.
To know that someone can be in a position like that and be true.
And she's a woman, which is not, and she's very, this is very tough for her. She's the first woman as a director in that place, and she's very criticized because she's tempting things like equality and 50-50, you know, like man and woman. I mean, she's trying to develop a lot of things who doesn't fit to anybody. I mean, but she's very courageous, and well,
Wonderful. Thank you.
If I may say something, hello everyone.
Well,
It happens that when I saw yesterday this incredible sermon, I would say, or speech, it was just before going to see a movie that deals with courage. This Brazilian movie with the actress that won some important prize that maybe she will also win the Oscar, I don't know. Perhaps you have heard about, but this is a movie based on real facts. And I'm not going to be a spoiler because the movie is really worthwhile to be watched. that is based on real facts that happened under the dictatorship in Brazil in the 70s. And the interesting thing about the movie is that the role of this woman, which apparently was just a housewife, of showing her courage, was exactly in the worst circumstances you can imagine. And yeah, to avoid spoiling the story, what I want to say is that sometimes it's really under the most difficult circumstances that, yeah, that courage can. I think courage is one of the great, perhaps, virtues, together with humility and honesty, dignity, all those things that this bishop referred to. But I also think courage is something behind the ego. I think that, I mean, the great courageous moments, they came from some other source than the ego. And it's very much related, of course, to the situation. And the way this woman in Brazil showed their courage was, of course, very, very demanding, because that was this terrible military dictatorship, that she was just a housewife taking care of the children. And all of a sudden, she really has to, yeah, leave and take care of the children, five children. And actually, based on I didn't know that. It's based on facts, real facts. And she even became she was a housewife, but then with 45 years old or so, she decided to make a degree in law, and she became an expert. She was one of the great lawyers or law people in Brazil that stand for the rights of the Indians. She was famous for defending. So it was out of all this horrible situation that she could show that this courage manifested. And that's exactly what I also, the very first thing I that touched me when I listened to this bishop, was her courage of doing that. So beautifully done, because you could see, of course, that she's trained to give these speeches from the pulpit, and she was able to combine, yeah, the technique of communication that was suitable to that particular situation with her humility, because that is the strength of that speech, is this combination of the two things, of being able to express a plea in the name of millions of people out of some deep source. Of course, that was based on Christian values and all that, but these Christian values, you could see that they are not even Christians. I would say that, again, now this problem of being Christians or Buddhists is not relevant. It's coming from a very, very deep source that normally we say is compassion or wisdom. Both were there in her words. And what is impressive is really to see how Trump and also his wife, and also the vice president, were reacting. Of course, they were decodifying it in a completely wrong way. They were decodifying it as if it was some political message. Of course, it was also political, but it was much more than that. The reaction of Trump of saying that she was nasty and all this is because, yeah, he still has to open his is like many people, like we also have his soul to be touched by wisdom. It's quite clear that he cannot do that. So we took it as a provocation. It's quite clear. And she perhaps knew that he was going to understand the words from that point of view, although she could be courageous enough to do it.
I think she probably had to, as in the case of the woman in Brazil, let go of what, of results or reactions. Because courage, like humility, as you point out, it really is an absence of ego. Because if we have a strong ego, well, then we'll probably get caught up and our courage will not be as courageous because we will be looking at ourselves being great, or the action will not be appropriate or something. And we're not, we don't act from a place of arriving or obtaining or provoking, but from a place of what's true, something like that. Yeah. Ingrid, yes, and then we are going to have to stop after that.
Yeah, I want to react on that because you said maybe somebody said that Trump might be a signal of that he's now the president, that it is that there's a good part to it. So you could say that his reaction, his strong reaction of his aggressive reaction is maybe a sign that the message was received.
Yeah, and to some extent, there was a message received, I think. Yeah, that's true. And then what happens with it, I don't know. And what, however, she made the plea not knowing what, not knowing. Okay, thank you, everyone. Wonderful evening.